the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
The holiday season and the SOC is back to deliver the goods. It's the Brian Campbell back in your ear hole, and it's the State of Combat podcast on CBS Sports MMA Holiday Edition. I may have a voice that sounds like auto-tune at the end, so you may just have to deal with it in our recording issues right now in our Stamford, Connecticut studio, but it's BC. It's your boy B-Dubs, Brandon Wise by my side, Sugar Rashad Evans on a holiday bye week. We got a lot to get into today. Looking back briefly at UFC Busan, looking ahead to Rampage, Fedor, and all things Bellator Risen this weekend ahead of New Year's Eve. And we got a little business to do in the in-between, which is getting to our holiday awards, our year-ending 2019, looking back on the highs, the lows, the good, bad, and the ugly. Why do I sound like auto-tune right now? I want to rock. I want to rock. All right, BC and B-Dubs coming at you. Brandon, this is your first Connecticut Christmas. Welcome, okay? Welcome.
Thank you, Brian. The listeners don't understand the issues that we just had trying to get this podcast started and the fact that you've been singing that song without stopping for the last 30 minutes while I'm trying to fix this.
All right. We got it off the ground. I don't know how it's going to sound, but, you know, it's the holiday season, Brandon. So whoop-de-doop, right? Dickory dock. We want to hand out some awards, give some gifts, give some presents. We appreciate the listeners out there. I know there's a lot of big Rashad Evans fans out there. We actually got a sound bit from Rashad. I don't know if this was ahead of a fight or a late night hookup.
I want you to put it on me. I want you to try to do your best to put it on me, because that's the only way I want it. If you don't give me everything you got, I'm going to be pissed off. That's what she said.
Thank you, Tito. Shout out to Rashad. Indeed, what a year for Rashad, by the way. Speaking of year-end awards, the 2019 UFC Hall of Famer. Maybe a comeback ahead of 2020. Maybe, Brandon. And what a year for you in the MMA space, right?
Didn't he fight in 2019, too?
I hope not.
I think he ended his career with a loss.
No, that was like last year, the year before. Okay. It was like six in a row or whatever.
But what a year for me. What do you mean?
You know, you attended some big time events in the MMA space. You moved to Connecticut. Hey, it's been a heck of a ride. You got in great shape. You sparred at Hard Knocks 365 with Fat Steve and a bunch of other guys.
Tall Steve. Oh, wow. I hope you meet him one day. He just kicks the living dog crap out of you.
All right. Hey, special reminder, if you like this show, you want to pass that holiday greeting back to us, a five-star review podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, wherever you assume and accumulate fine audio, please do that indeed. But Brandon, this year's been something, right? Dana White and UFC essentially coming out a couple weeks ago and saying, look, this is our best year financially. Now, that would seem like, naturally off the top, it wouldn't make sense, because 2016 was an insane year. Conor McGregor fought three times. It was the end of Rousey. The sale happened to Endeavor. It seemed like it could never get better. But that's the old model. That's the old pay-per-view model. Now we're swimming in ESPN money, if we're talking UFC. Performance Institute is rocking. China expansion. And to be honest, it's been a pretty damn good year for big-time fights and big-time shows delivering.
Yeah, we were putting our list together before the show and for the last couple of weeks for our year-end awards. And I don't know, man. Like, when you look at what 2018 was in terms of big-name fights, we thought, you know, it was a good year. There were some cool moments that we had.
Let's not forget, we're coming off the hangover of 2017, which was not a great year for the MMA big time world. And yeah, 2018 was fine. It was serviceable.
I mean, it gets salvaged at the end by Conor and Khabib, right? Like with the big moments of before that fight and then obviously the black eye, so to speak, at the end of it. But that really saved the year in terms of giving you a big name fight. Or a big name moment. I mean, I guess.
And there was almost a year long build when you consider the April bus situation, right? And all that.
I guess technically, you know, DC and Stipe 1 was in 2018, but on the whole, there wasn't a big name fight that you were thinking, wow, this is like going to be a game changer outside of DC and Stipe 1 at International Fight Week.
You're very close to pulling a Rashad and hit me up with a DC Stipe.
I'm toeing the line, man. We also had 2018 was also when we had Max Holloway get drugged allegedly by his now a former manager. I think he came out and said he found out what happened with that whole situation.
So it wasn't CTE. It wasn't a bad weight cut. It wasn't.
It was his diet. That's what he's claiming.
Well, I'll tell you the way he bounced back after that and looked great. It's hard to say anything negative. But yeah, it's been 2019, man. I feel like everything seemed to change for me in April. Atlanta. Those two bangers back to back, Adesanya Gastelum, Holloway Poirier. That to me felt like the welcome to like, hey, this could be a hellacious year. Because that was the beginning of that nice late spring summer stretch for UFC where it was one big fight after another. I will say, you know, I mean, certainly from a financial standpoint, I'm sure with that ESPN deal, they're doing fantastic. But this did seem like the brand, the sport, did come back up to a higher level this year.
Yeah. I mean, when you're talking about, we'll get into the events of the year and all of that stuff later in the show, but like, you're talking about April with 236. I mean, the very first ESPN card was insane. I forgot all of the names that were on that card coming in when it's capped off by Henry Cejudo and TJ Dillashaw. But you had Donald Cerrone putting an end to the Alexander Hernandez hype train on that card.
You're really bringing that up as like a big moment of the year?
Well, no, but like we were writing off Cowboy before the start of the year. He was supposed to be just another like legend getting fed to a youngster, and he turned that into a moment. 235 was stacked, man. Like, I think we forgot about that when we were looking at the biggest cards of the year. Like, 235 had, Jones against,
Anthony Smith.
Anthony Smith. But you also had Kamaru and Tyron and, Robbie Lawler and Ben Askren. And on the undercard, there was a bunch of names that were on the way up that delivered moments. So, this year in general, I think, you have to put it up there with like the top three of the last decade.
And you need big time storylines like 2016 when you had Conor fighting three times and times and times.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
And we're back, your boy BC, sitting next to B-Dubs. I think we've got the audio issues worked out. Shout out to sound engineer extraordinaire, Debo, Eric DeBerardini.
You butchered it.
Eric the Butcher, thank you very much. No longer am I an auto-tune, but I'm still willing to play the tunes and belt them out. I'm still willing to do anything you need me to.
You're playing touch butt with that dork in the park.
Except for that. Thank you.
We did whatever we could to make sure you could play those sound drops.
All right, Brandon. This past weekend, UFC Busan was in my living room very early, and you know what? It didn't suck. A lot of guys on there I never heard of, but when it came time for the people that I did, my guy, Du Ho Choi. I know this isn't the headliner. I know this isn't the main story come out of there, but you know I love me some Korean Superboy. His first fight in over 2 years. And he looked like he was on the way to knocking out Charles Air Jourdain. And then he got sent to hell in round two. So it's like, oh, what do we do with this guy? Because I want him to be amazing. Some of his qualities are amazing, but I feel like he's the next Tom Duquesnoy of somebody who's going to steal my heart and then fade away before he can even burn out.
Yeah, he's... I'm so teetering on that edge right now of him being the Korean Superboy and him being the Korean Average Boy, as you so delicately put it the other day. He's had two really good fights, right? Like, the Cub Swanson fight was hell on wheels. Just a hellacious brawl between two dudes who just threw everything out there. And then he gets the Jeremy Stephens fight and just gets destroyed. Like, it was so clear that he was not on that level yet where he could fight top 10 guys in that weight class. And then he gets the 2 year break, right? Or a year break, I think it was, because that fight was a while ago. And he looked great in the first round. Like, he looked like the guy that we expected him to be. But then Jourdain slowly puts the pieces together. He's putting the puzzle together to where it's like, uh-oh, what's going to happen here? And you saw it, because I'm sitting there watching the fight, and I'm like, oh, Jourdain is just setting him up with this jab. And then Superboy was not figuring out where the jab was going. So every time he set it up with the top, he then followed it with a bottom, with a body punch. Or if he went to the body, he went to the head with the back. And he just opened him up. Like, it was textbook, to the point where he set him up with the jab low and then just over the top with the hook.
Yeah, he's our boy Korean Superboy is a flawed fighter in the end. And it sucks because there's elements to him, his aggression, his willingness to attack, his punch resistance that's through the roof. I mean, he showed you in that Cub Swanson loss that he's one of those dudes who is willing to die on his sword, only not just willing to fall on it, you need to kill him and turn it. And he will be fighting until you turn it on him. And Air Jourdain, shout out to this rising fighter who now needs to be recognized and noticed, he was able to put that away after weathering that early storm. It's tough, though, because when I first saw Korean Superboy come on the scene, I'm like, here's a complete package, and he's a killer, by the way. And, you know, he looks like he's the real deal. And sometimes you fall in love with your power, or you fall in love with your ability to take punishment. He just sort of got ahead of himself with those two abilities, and he's not a complete fighter. Doesn't mean it's the end of the road, but he's teetering more toward flash in the pan what could have been already now with three straight defeats than he is anything else, especially with that big gap in between. I don't want him to become a traction fighter like Korean Zombie at one point in his career seemed to be, although now he's turned it around again to really become a true title contender, and we'll get to that in a second. But this was a fun fight. It was interesting. It just, you know, there's some guys you just attach yourself to, Brandon. You're like, that's my guy. Like you and that weirdo Johnny Walker, you're like, that's my guy. This guy speaks to me, okay? Now he's speaking three straight L's, okay? It is what it is.
Just don't be the Baron all over again.
We had a interesting co-main event, Volkan Ozdemir, Alexander Rakic.
Good job.
Yeah, interesting in the fact that Rakic looked like the highlight reel guy that we play him up to be in that first round before Volkan started going to the legs in a big way, and then an alien grew below Alexander's left knee, and then by the end of the fight, we kind of had somewhat boring scorecard split decision, and once again, Ozdemir gets the whoa. Wow. Okay, sorry, we remixed right there. Once again, he gets. What I'm really saying here is Volkan was on the wrong end, I thought, of that split decision loss against Dom Reyes. Now he sneaks in there with a win. I didn't necessarily think Volkan looked great or deserved it, but really what this fight was all about was to find out if Rakic was title material, and Brandon, it was a very uneven performance.
Yeah, he came out in that first round, and he looked like he had the power, right? Like, he looked like a Thiago Santos out there who was just murdering people in the ring. And
Maheta.
I should have known that was coming. He just, his muscle, though, might just be too much. Like, he's fighting at 205. He's built like a damn Mack truck. But I mean, is at some point you got to realize the muscle might be carrying too much because he's not moving well. You know, like he once he gets to round two, he slows down so much. And you could see, like Vulcan said after the fight, that he could feel Rocket slowly wearing down. So that's part of the game plan, like, right? Where Vulcan starts attacking that lead leg and all of a sudden the alien starts growing on his shin. But
I mean, should we pause and just really, really break that down? I mean, look, we've seen hematomas on heads. Everybody remembers Haseem Rockman in boxing, Mark Hominick in round five against Jose Aldo, but this was freaking weird, bro.
I think we've seen two of those this year too, like where just random growths are coming up and it's like, how does that happen? Is that just from not training your shins properly? Because
It's just hematoma life. What is that? A pocket of blood just pops? I don't know. I don't know how the human body works, obviously. I'm just some jabron over here. But wow, did you see that weird stuff going on? That thing wanted out. But look, it's a step back for Rakichi. Should have gave him the stink face. But really, for Volkan Ozdemir, he's settling back down, even with a win here, into just sort of average gatekeeper guy. I mean, look, you step up to him in a Fort Lauderdale bar, you're getting KO'd, bro. All right? But
No.
All right. I mean,
that's the thing, though. It's like light heavyweight. This is what it is, right? Like, it's really uneven. They're like, just not bipolar, but like, they just have these weird ebbs and flows in their fighting where he loses three straight, but now he's won two. You know, like,
it's a weird division. It's not deep. It's interesting. John Jones is just going to keep beating whoever they put in front of him. Maybe Dom Reyes. We'll see. But this main event in Busan turned out to be what, yeah, I always say what should happen. When a young guy in those Korean super, Korean zombie is not young, but when a guy who's streaking and peaking faces that old veteran, when it's Peter Yan, Peyotre, against Mr. Faber, sort of the laws of nature should take over. They did in this fight, as Frankie Edgar came in there on very short notice. We know he may or may not have a fight with Corey Sandhagen in a month at Bantamweight, and they should cancel that right now if they haven't. But Frankie Edgar came in there to win. He had really bad hair, and he got knocked the hell out. And this was the elevation of Korean Zombie coming back into that title picture. And Brandon, after he lost to Jose Aldo a few years back, he took the 2 years off of mandatory military service in South Korea that we've seen for a few different combat athletes. And he came back hungry. What is he, 3-1 since then? Or is it, and the only loss is that last second miracle victory by Yair Rodriguez in Denver. So he's looking like a title contender because he did what he was supposed to do in this spot. Blow away the veteran. And at 38, dude, Frankie Edgar, what can you say? What can you say, Brandon? Say it. Say what needs to be said, okay? Say it.
No, I'm going to say stuff about Zombie first because
you want me to bring in Prince Nassim Hamed?
I know this sounds terrible. I think you should finish.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you are correct on that. But Korean Zombie, man, like, that was just a mauling. And it was so interesting to just see how the pacing started with that fight where Edgar is normal, his normal self, like bouncing around the ring, and Zombie's just basically saying, they're like, come hit me. Please come hit me because I'm going to counter the hell.
Yeah,
out of
we actually have the footage of him saying that. Here it is.
Let me bang with somebody. Let somebody stand up and bang with me.
Yeah, Frankie answered.
And then got hit in the head, like, I think it was 75 times when he had back mount and was just raining down punches on from behind.
Yeah, that got gross, and Frankie got busted open, too. It kind of looked like Lesnar Mir 2 there with just one guy with truck hands behind him giving it to him. But he's a real title contender. He is, and I love this story because Korean Zombie was fun journeyman for a while, and then he kind of worked himself in when Jose Aldo had cleaned out that division into a title opportunity. He's more focused. He's a killer now.
Yes.
Like, that's the win he was supposed to get if he's for real, yet he still looked impressive in doing it.
So you think he would be, what, top three right now at featherweight?
Look, I think Korean Zombie's got something special from a marketing appeal. Especially when they're trying to do things in Asia, that he might get fast-tracked.
Maybe. The problem is, man, like, we were supposed to see him in a top three fight. Like, it just sucks because this was supposed to be him against Ortega, and that was going to be awesome.
That would have told us a lot. Ortega's, we haven't seen him since the Holloway loss, so he's there, but he's not. And then you've got Volkanovski on top.
And you got Yair now making his way into the picture, too. Like, featherweight's reloading pretty quickly.
I don't think it's crazy that they pump Korean Zombie in there for a first Volkanovski title defense. He didn't take any damage in this fight. If you want to go to lower South Asia there with Australia and South Korea and that whole market, it'd be interesting.
Would you rather see that first, or would you rather see Zombie against Holloway?
I think it's very, I don't know, is my answer. Because I don't know how ready Brian Ortega is going to be. And do you give him now somewhat of a softer fight because it's so much time away? When in reality, he's one win away from getting back into the title picture. So I don't know what they end up doing there.
He said he needed, I think, another 3 months. So he was targeting like April or May for his comeback.
But it's always great when you have an abundant of viable title contenders. And this was a fight that certainly declared that, because you need to put wins together. He's 3-1, like I said, since he's come back. He looked really good in all of them. I like that performance. Frankie, this is the first time he looked bad, though, I would have to say. I mean, look, that knockout loss to Ortega was so quick that you really couldn't get a great look at it. But Frankie had nothing at this level. And it's tough to say things like, I think you should finish, but here's what I think he should finish doing, Brandon. I think you should finish competing for titles. I think he should finish taking last-minute dangerous opportunities, and I think he should become his glorified Rich Franklin old self and just take main event opportunities. Like the idea of him taking this fight isn't bad. That's kind of what you do when you're an old name and you can float weight classes. But stop with the bantamweight dream. Stop with the Sandhagen fight, and just realize that at 38, you don't need to fight every 3 or 4 months. Let's get some fun old guy fights. Let's get Faber, Edgar too. Let's get some that type of thing going. Let's get him out of the mix against elite guys. You look at his record now. What has he lost? 3 of the last 4, right? But we're talking about the very best in that division.
Well, and his only win, though, is against Cub Swanson, who was on a 5-fight losing streak at that point. I don't know, man.
He did beat the brakes off of Yair Rodriguez before that, though.
Yeah.
So here's what I don't want to see. I don't want to see Frankie back in there against a Yair Rodriguez. I want to see him.
That was also Yair Rodriguez 3 years ago.
Yeah. It's tough when we see our heroes go down, and he got sent to hell here.
I have a fun one for you. If this person is healthy in 2020, you don't want him to float to bantamweight? I think this is actually a really fun fight for
him. Don't
say
Henan Bro.
No, he's not with the UFC anymore. Dom Cruz.
That's the type of matchmaking, yes. Because it's so sellable, it's two legends, and the winner of it actually, if it's Dom Cruz, could catapult in the direction again of a title shot.
Yes.
I think Frankie's just one of those dudes that's going to be too competitive in game for his own good, and they need to stop putting him in fights that lead to somewhere. It's the same argument, dude, of Anderson Silva a few years back. Why are you fighting David Branch level guys? Why are you fighting Cannoneer? Why, you know, like you tried hard to get the title shot. You went into Adesanya. They made it in an event. It was something, but it's over. You're 40 something. You are a spectacle now. Fight old guys, okay?
Yeah.
Stop. Don't fight killers. Don't fight average guys. Don't do it. I don't want any Jack Hermansons against Anderson Silva. Stop the madness, all right? That's what I got for you from Busan and Frankie Edgar. We can't linger there. Bellator, well, we got more to say? Is that what you're saying?
Keep going.
All right, you're about to set me off here. Bellator had a pair of Hawaii cards over the weekend.
Can you call them cards?
I know, because I hate when they split up two cards in the same venue, when in reality, put together, the card would be pretty badass. Not great, but the card would be solid. Friday night was supposed to be Josh Barnett's return from, good Lord, 3 years out of the cage, making his Bellator debut. It didn't happen because of an illness. My girl, Alejandra Lara, though, did step up and got a win there over Vida Ortega. Did you see that little piece of business, that 3-round war they had?
No.
Lara left her a bloody mess by the end of that.
That sounds about right. I don't know how she became your girl, but
I think she can get back in there against Alima Mae McFarlane, who defended her title in her home state there in the Saturday night main event. If they're building toward that as a rematch, I'm in. You're not in on that?
I don't think they're building towards that. I think they're building towards Liz Carmouche.
It's a big signing for them. If they did Carmouche against Lara, that might be the fight to set up the title challenger.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Lara lost her only opportunity at the title against IMM. IMM? Is that what we're calling her?
What are you doing?
Alima Lay. ILM?
Are you doing that because you can't say the name?
I'm teetering. I'm falling off the side of the cliff. They're a couple days out from the holidays. But shout out to Azul. That's our girl. Okay, shout out right there.
AJ McKee.
Over Derek Campos to advance in the 16-man featherweight tournament. A good advancement there. All in all, though, wasn't a giant night. It wasn't a giant weekend there for Bellator. All right, we'll put that behind us. Brandon, is there any headlines we should be hitting here before we look back at the year it was? There's nothing going on, right?
I don't think anything happened.
It's going to be an interesting time because, of course, we've got Rampage this weekend. You're going to have, ahead of New Year's, the PFL finals. Although, look, my PFL balloon got kind of popped a while ago. And then you got nothing for a few weeks until Conor Cowboy on January 18th. You okay with this lull coming up? You all right with it?
I'm very happy about this. This gives me some time to relax for a minute.
All right. All right. Some time to face the pain a little bit, deal with life. That's cool. That's cool. This year, though, Brandon, 2019, we hit it off the top as a whole. We're going to do Fighter of the Year. We're going to do Fight of the Year. We're going to do that stuff. But who won 2019? If there's an MVP of 2019, it could be a promoter, a promotion, a face, a moment. What? Like when every year, like when I say 2016, you think Conor McGregor, right? When I say 2017, I think, damn, UFC sucked. They couldn't find any headliners. Conor was boxing against Floyd. When I say whatever year, you might go, okay, well, that's Liddell or that's, you know. When you say the year of our Lord 2019, what do you think of?
Street Jesus, baby.
Wow. Two-piece and a soda.
Three-piece and a soda.
All right. Thank you, Leon Edwards. We had a part in that. We had like the only major interview with Jorge Masvidal on the build toward the Ben Askren fight.
Yes, before that fight. But now he's kind of become like, I'll go to anywhere and talk to you guys.
No, anywhere that matters, though.
Yeah. No, but he's going to every major outlet now, and he's talking.
I think we talked to him at the last moment before he was...
game bred.
Where he was monster, before he was crossover, before he was the G, the thug, the everything, before he was the guy. He was the guy this year. If there's a, you know, if there's an MVP, a most popular vote, somebody who just took the year and made it their own, it's certainly Jorge Masvidal.
Did you call him George?
I did do that.
I don't think there's an argument, really. Like, you can say Israel Adesanya if you want, but, like, I don't think he has no crossover appeal yet. He's not in the casual conversation. He didn't have the freaking Rock handing the belt to him when he won in Australia.
Yeah, you know you win sort of pop culture MMA MVP of the year when you have... arguably maybe the moment of the year, arguably maybe the knockout of the year, you're part of one of the fights of the year, and you're in contention for fighter of the year. And yet, in this year, he didn't even win a real title. He's the BMF champion. It's rare, Brandon, that somebody makes that type of escalation onto the public consciousness, is a legitimate contender for fighter of the year, which we'll get to in a second, and yet isn't an actual champion. When was the last time that's happened? Has it ever happened? I don't think so. You know, boxing has had a couple oddball fighter of the year picks. I say oddball, like, remember Glenn Johnson in 2004? The light heavyweight?
I don't think I've ever heard that name
before. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's a guy who got hot 1 year. Remember Carlos Baldemir? These are guys who sort of got hot for 1 year, came out of nowhere, but they only got on our radar by winning championships. You very rarely see somebody, especially a guy who we knew about. It's not like we didn't know about Masvidal before, but somebody go from... Is it too strong to call him a journeyman entering this year?
No, I think that's pretty accurate.
To see somebody go essentially from journeyman, I guess it was a similar to the Nate Diaz leap in 2016, but Nate Diaz didn't win the second Conor fight. Nate Diaz didn't win a championship either, but he went from being a guy that we know and we like, but he's a guy, to contending to being the guy. Jorge Masvidal kind of made that leap to being the guy this year from the standpoint of the pulse, the public consciousness, the superhero of the sport at the moment.
Yeah, it was a... I don't even know what you would call it in terms of ascension, because it's like, it happened so fast where you're just like, all of a sudden he's must-see TV. Like, and I don't even know where you would point to as like that moment, because... like you said, he had like three or four.
Well, the moment was the Askren knockout where it went, but where it became real.
But even before that, though, like the Leon Edwards stuff made him a more, I guess, to the hardcore fans, like, oh, this is my guy now. Like,
yes,
he's the real. Like, he doesn't play that game. And then all of the build, like you said, towards the Askren fight, like that felt legitimate, like animosity before that fight.
Oh, that was real. But it needed that viral. It needed the viral nature of that knockout to really go crossover in your living room. Casual fans know him, and then to get the, which really is insane to me that actually happened. That the UFC said this MSG card, which is one of our babies, right? We break the record for the MSG is the most hallowed building in all of sports, and we break the gate record every time we go there. And we're going to do a non-title BMF fake title, and it's going to be counterculture icons Nate Diaz and Jorge Masvidal, and Jorge's going to dress like Scarface in the build-up. Like, it's like, that is such storybook. Never would have seen it coming, and that's the year this fella had.
Dude, they delayed a Canelo Alvarez fight for this man's fight.
And not a crappy Canelo fight. One in which he was kind of doing some historic business himself, moving up a couple weight classes.
So, I don't think that there's an argument for anybody else. His career just hit another level this year. I'm so glad that he came back. Like, there was a time where we didn't know if he was in a fight again. Because he took the break. He took an extended break. Did a reality TV show. It felt like one of those things where it's like, all right, Jorge might just be done. Like, and to his point, like to that point, it would have been okay because it was like he fought the elite guys. He had his chance to get up there in like 2017 or 2016, and he lost.
2017, do you remember he fought at UFC 211 in Dallas? That week was my first trip to the Fort Lauderdale office of CBS Sports. I interviewed him from the studio on Skype, and I remember saying to myself after it ended, like, A, we're going to have to bleep the crap out of this interview. And B, if this guy could put wins together, he could be kind of a street Conor McGregor, you know, kind of like because he just says it all. And by the way, shout out, I'm going to negatively call out our brethren at CBS Sports. That interview never saw the light of day. Don't you love when you do hard work and you do it great? And then if 4 days later you go, hey, where's that interview? I want to tweet it out. It was like, I don't know where it went. Sorry, UFC. Thanks for setting that up. No one grabbed it. It was a fantastic interview. He acted like a killer in it. What was that fight at 211? Who did he fight?
Damian Maia.
And then that was the setup for his Wonderboy Thompson fight.
Yep.
You and I were there. He lost every second of that fight, and he looked every bit the journeyman. And that began that long layoff, which we know the story now, that led to refueling and rebuilding the guy who captured 2019 and made it his whole. If the knockout of Askren, and we'll get to it later when it's in contention for knockout of the year, if that's the moment of the year, I think it is. I think that's the MMA moment of the year, right?
The knockout?
The knockout.
Yeah.
I mean, Stipe knocking out DC for what it meant was massive. But the moment of the year that had every, when you get every casual caring for that moment, dude, that was, I think, the moment of the year. You know what my surreal moment of the year was? Exactly what you just said before. When I'm sitting in the MGM Grand Garden Arena, like, hey, Canelo's about to walk. Let's do this. Hold on. We're going to wait 90 minutes and watch Jorge Masvidal on the big screen. That's the surreal moment of the year. Both are connected to tell the same story that this guy's your MVP of 2019. And it's weird. It's ridiculous. It's outrageous. I can't believe it happened. And yet it's not just sound bites and a freak knockout. It's a guy who put together three wins and became a legitimate title contender and became like right on the outset of the pound for pound list on top of that.
Yeah.
Right on the outskirts. Excuse me. Let me skirt you a little bit there.
Well, he started the year in what? He was, before the Till fight, he was like number 11 or 12 in the welterweight division, or not even ranked, I don't think.
Yeah.
And now he's top two or top three in most people's rankings. Like, it takes something special like that to become the person of the year in MMA.
Wow. Wow. This argument, this debate, this conversation flows perfectly into the CBS Sports pick for Fighter of the Year in 2019 in MMA. How do we do it at CBS Sports? We vote. Insiders, myself, Brandon Wise, Gentleman Jack Crosby, who people know from the State of Combat Pro Wrestling Show, and also fill-in appearances here. Brent Brookhouse, a very respected MMA journalist who joined our staff this year, also in on that. We voted, and how it works is it's a democracy, baby. We may have different people that we think. And there were some strong contenders this year, but I think it was a two-horse race, even with that late push from Alexander Volkanovski, and we can get to him in a second. But I thought it came down to Jorge Masvidal and Israel Adesanya. You and I have had versions of this debate in the past, Brandon, but the people have spoken, a majority rules, and Jorge Masvidal is your 2019 CBS Sports Fighter of the Year. Why, Brandon?
I mean, do we need to rehash everything that we just talked about? Because it was an insane year for the man, Jorge Masvidal. Like, comes back from a two-year hiatus, goes to London, takes on a gorilla, as he calls himself, which is not far off, in Darren Till at welterweight, when Darren Till looks like a damn light heavyweight in there most times that he's fighting, and gets rocked early, bounces back, slowly gathers himself, and delivers an incredible two-punch knockout where you're just like, whoa, the power is back. Jorge has something there. Darren Till does not get knocked out like that easily.
No, never.
And the punch and then the finisher on the way down was just incredible, to the point where it's like, okay, maybe we need to take Jorge a little bit more seriously now. Then he has the moment backstage with Leon Edwards, who I hope we get to see them fight.
So you're
this
saying
year?
He's actually 4-0 this year, because that when he lit him up with those three punches and bled him, he bled the sucker.
Yeah, I mean,
you calling Leon Edwards a sucker?
I want to see them fight this year. That's what I'm saying. That's on my wish list. Then we get the build towards Ben Askren and the bad blood that started with how the Robbie Lawler and Ben Askren fight ended, where Ben is talking smack about Robbie Lawler, and Jorge is like a very big Robbie Lawler fan and former teammate.
Yes.
And then we get the knockout heard around the world, as you put it, where he tells him before the fight, are you sure you're ready? With his hands behind his back, leaning against the cage.
Ben Askren told us on this podcast, Masvidal said that I'm going to end the Askren bloodline. And we're like, oh, this is great promotion. That is the most perfect. That's why that's the moment of the year. That's why it's in the contention for knockout of the year. It's so freaking perfect, Brandon. It's everything he said he was going to do. And it validates the year and his intentions of, quote unquote, baptizing people better than any moment could have. And it's like he did it so gangster too, hands behind his back, sort of unassuming, and then darting in. I mean, look, it's so badass.
And then the Nate Diaz fight. Like, the icing on the cake is fighting Nate Diaz, who we don't really know what division he would be, where we would rank him in terms of welterweights or lightweights at this point. But he beat a guy who is so well-respected in the game.
Somewhat soundly. Somewhat, even though it was a kind of a hellacious fight for both, it was kind of sneakily one-sided within that
fight. He dominated that fight in the first two rounds. Third round, Nate started to come on, you could say, with those elbows from the bottom. But Nate's face was falling apart. Like, Nate can say whatever he wants. But
and he will.
His face was falling apart. So
Nate will say anything.
Yeah, Conor McGregor, you're taking everything I work for, motherfucker.
See, he'll just say it, all right? I'll fight you. If Nate had been coming back and that was his comeback fight, it would be easy to discount it. Nate had just come back against Anthony Pettis and looked really good. Yep. Looked like maybe ready to re-enter a title picture, a place we never really thought he'd come back to, because he barely fights, and when he does, he's basically a celebrity headliner. It's a great year. I mean, I don't mean to be the hater here, because I did not vote for him and because I've been arguing against him. And that's just because the year that Israel Adesanya had, who is our runner-up, correct?
Yes.
And who's a guy who, I mean, could have and would have won it in almost any other year when you consider three wins, all of them very high quality. And I know there's a mini argument in there on the Anderson Silva win, but dude, Anderson Silva poured out the jug that night. And
he poured out the jug onto himself, like rubbed himself in some HGH. Or...
He prevented himself from getting KO'd and made it a very difficult night, to the point that some people afterwards were like, was that actually impressive by Adesanya? Did he not go for it? Because Silva really, it was his last stand. It was his last stand. He went for it. And yet he had three wins as a whole, yet he's probably in the fight of the year, we'll get to in a second, in such a strong showing over Gastelum, in which he walked through hell. And then he goes in there against the pound-for-pound ranked champion, one of the pillars of the sport, in Robert Whittaker. Yes, coming off of injury and time off, yes, but a guy who you're like, that guy ain't losing for a while, and knocks him the hell out. It's one of those weird debates, Brandon.
No, you need to stop right there.
I said it.
First of all, you called him a pillar of the UFC.
Yes, in terms of that's a building not, block for the future.
No, that's not true. First of all, it is, okay? Second of all, you said you thought he wasn't going to lose for a long time after you've told me after those two freaking Romero fights that you thought Romero won both times.
Yeah, well, the judge... No, only the second one. The first one's debatable. The second one, definitely. All right. We're not here to talk about the past, Mark McGwire, okay? We're here to talk about the future. But it is an interesting debate. I like these debates when it comes down to this or fight of the year. I mean, Adesanya, to me, what else could he have done? But yet, Masvidal had one of those crazy years that we just spent 20 minutes talking about where you capture everyone's attention and you're really awesome and you sell and you move product and you go from average guy to suddenly cult hero and all you put all that together and he's kind of pound for pound-ish. It's a strong-ass case. I think it's a tiny bit of an emotional pick. I think it's a tiny bit because what else the hell would Adesanya have to do? But we're not here to dig up that debate. We've already had it, all right?
We've had it like four times.
But can you just give this man, Israel Adesanya, the due? Did he also make a critical leap?
Yes. No, he definitely did, man. My only argument is that if you stacked up the weakest, quote-unquote, win of those two fighters... The Darren Till one would be the weakest for Jorge, and the Anderson Silva one would be the weakest for Adesanya.
Yeah, it's about even.
And I think Masvidal's win against Darren Till was more impressive.
I just want to say, don't discount what Silva
brought
to the table.
He may have been listening
to the performance enhancing audio, but that only strengthens my argument.
I will say, in terms of the last 4 years that we've been like
everybody's on steroids.
Thank you. Sorry.
In the last 4 years that we've been doing these kind of debates, I don't think we've had a closer one than this.
You mean that time you tried to argue that Silvia Calvillo with five wins would have been...
Cynthia Calvillo.
Yeah, sorry. No, it's close, man. And then when you consider, Brandon, seriously, the extended argument involved guys like Pitbull and Bellator, who knocked out Michael Chandler, who became their first, you know, simultaneous champ, strong year. But then you're like, what do we do with Volkanovski? Who makes a very important... Did he get two wins?
He had two, but the third win, if you wanted to count it, was December 29th last year.
But you can't do it. I'm sorry.
Against Chad Mendez, who was on a roll.
He knocks out Chad Mendez and sends him into retirement, and then clinical victories over Jose Aldo and maybe the third best pound for fourth best. Well, Max Holloway coming off of that Poirier loss did get pushed back a little bit in pound for pound, but we're talking about like the greatest featherweight of all time, 14 fight win streak in the division, and Volkanovski goes out there and makes a serious leap. Great year for him. Amanda Nunes did nothing wrong here. Head kicks Holly Holm. Help points are tougher than maybe some expected GDR in their rematch. It was a big year for fighter arguments because guess what name we haven't mentioned yet? Kamaru Usman. Did he not make a leap? Dude, you could make the case, okay? Do you know what sometimes settles arguments for me when I'm debating fighter of the year, Brandon? And this is why I think when somebody only has one win, and everyone's like, well, he can't be in that argument. He only had one win. But if that one win is the best win of the year, you could argue that Stipe Miocic is in this conversation because that one win is so strong. Kamaru Usman had one of those one wins with the Tyron Woodley domination. A guy who, yes, I had pound for pound number three, the most efficient fighter in the game. A guy who seemed to figure it out how to beat everybody by taking away their best skill. And he got dominated. And then all Usman did was author a fight of the year contender against Colby, go five hellacious rounds and knock the guy out. And he's what on our list? Fifth?
Kamaru is fifth, yeah.
Holy crap! Oh, and by the way, John Jones came back from a one-year steroid suspension for picograms and recorded three wins in like a six-month span against fairly credible and solid guys.
So that was what I was actually going to say is like, I feel like we're at the point with Amanda Nunes and John Jones where it doesn't matter who they fight because we have them in such high regard that they're never going to be the fighter of the year anymore because their wins might be really good quality, but we're just like, well, they're John Jones. They're Amanda
Nunes. It's a fair point. It's people used to say that about Michael Jordan in the 90s. He didn't win the MVP every year like he probably could have because you're just like, man, I'm bored voting him. Karl Malone hasn't won it in a while. Let's give him a one he doesn't deserve. Well,
let's go a little bit more modern. That's the Derrick Rose MVP award over LeBron.
All right. Well, Derrick Rose had a bust-out year, okay? Derrick Rose was your Jorge Masvidal that year, okay? And he paid for it with a horrific injury. Now he's all right now. All right, here's the point, Brandon. What a freaking year. Who do you think had the win of the year? What's the best critical win? when you consider Stipe knocking out Cormier, you consider Woodley getting owned by Usman, and maybe you consider, oh man, you know who else we didn't mention in this fight? Oh my God, how good is this? The guy who finished third in our vote. People are listening to this probably going, what are you guys, idiots? Henry Cejudo, Triple C, became a two-division champion, knocked out TJ Dillashaw on roids, and then came back and destroyed Marlon Moraes, who was looking like a killer. Brandon, what a freaking year. What's the best critical win this year? Could it get any better than Adesanya over Whitaker?
Like, what do you mean by critical win?
Best win. You essentially It's where quality of competition is basically the basis of this award, right?
I mean,
the circumstances and the quality of competition.
If you're going that route, I mean, Dustin Poirier gets in this conversation with his win over Max Holloway, doesn't he?
That's a fair argument.
I mean, he was on an 11 fight win streak.
And it was a hellacious fight, and it was a 5-round war. That's a very good point.
That's so tough.
Bro, this was a freaking amazing. We sound like two guys high in a closet. Some of those elements are true. We're definitely in a closet right now. I haven't checked your bloodstream, though. But we just had a long debate on Fighter of the Year, and I'm like, man, this guy at number 7 is amazing. I forgot Henry Cejudo because he's so cringe and he's missed the second half of the year, yet those two wins are in the argument against anybody.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Two championships.
Even though you could
two championships at one time. Two chicks at one time, bro. All right.
All about the Bellas. You could argue that the TJ Dillashaw, that's still one that we can talk about where it's like, did he get stopped? Did they ref stop that too early? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, he probably did. But now you find out that dude's on EPO.
Have you seen the pictures of Dillashaw lately, by the way?
No.
I got to Google this for you in a second and show you because TJ is in that 2-year retirement layoff port of the suspension, and he is thick, is what I would say, like with two C's.
Thicker than Errol Spence Jr. looked in that interview the other day?
Thicker than Errol Spence looked in that interview. I got to pull this picture up for you. But yeah, if you're telling me to pick a fight or a moment of the year, I think I have to lean towards Poirier, even though you just laid out some good arguments for
quality of win, really. I mean, look, other quality. I mean, God, Stipe, what he did against DC, you can't just look over that, right? I mean, DC was like the pound for pound king in some regards at that point.
I mean, that fight had argument for fight of the year too. I mean, it was a
crazy year, man. When Dana says that now, and you're like, Dana, how could you say that this was the best year in UFC history? And we're thinking, oh, that only means because that ESPN deal was so tall. But when you have this many people making cases, Brandon, that means for fight of the year, that means you had this many great co-mains and main events. It was a really damn great year. And we're barely talking about Bellator. They made a mini comeback to a degree in terms of relevancy and putting out fights that we cared about.
Well, it's because of the tournaments, right?
True. But it mattered. It worked. You know, their tent poles got us moving a little bit. Think about, Brandon, this is a monster year for MMA. Think about this, bro. Obviously, if we're going to do promotion of the year, it's UFC. Bellator had done better than they did the year before. One championship made a giant leap. Not giant enough to grab our attention all the time, but you get an American TV deal and you sign 3 UFC names, pretty big year.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Would you say that PFL, with their tournaments? Oh my God, Dillashaw. Dillashaw looks like a... Yeah. Looks about 175 in that photo. Damn, he's got abs, but...
He's losing his abs very quickly.
Wow. Brandon, this was also like the best year in PFL history, right? You signed Rory McDonald at the close of the year.
That was the news we didn't talk about, was the Rory signing.
I talked about it with Rashad Evans last week. I don't know if you listened to our show, it was a big part of our show. It was great. But the point of that is it was a big year for a lot of people, a lot of promotions. When the money's flowing, it's a big year for us too. We get our pockets lined a little bit. We get more opportunities, right?
I am concerned, though, about the... I've seen,
you're allowed to move to Connecticut. It's a big year.
Allowed. I've seen some stories out there about the potential fight bubble about to burst on combat sports, where the money is high right now, but is there something backing that all this money? Like, Mikey Garcia just got $7 million to go fight.
I think it's more dangerous on the boxing side because people are getting paid money. They just don't... Like, it's not realistic.
Right.
DAZN came in there and just splashed the damn pot. That whole thing may pop, but the UFC deal seems concrete, and the UFC is not stopping and putting out great fights constantly.
They're also cheap, so that helps.
cheapen paying the fighters. Yes, yes, yes. They did raise their pay-per-view price $5 more. Your thoughts?
Can't wait till it gets to 100.
I mean, look, the argument against that, and it sucks. It sucks. Pay-per-view sucks. It's where we're at in fights. The argument against that is UFC gives you friggin' great stuff. You know how long I've been following? Can I tell you the last time boxing had a, like, I cannot miss this pay-per-view co-main event?
Go ahead.
Probably Danny Garcia, Lucas Matisse, 2013. Floyd Canelo. And that fight only happened in that spot because Floyd knew he had an opportunity to set the pay-per-view record. So he thought adding that would get him there. They finished at that time. They finished second, 2.2 million pay-per-view buys. Great or four? Great card, right? I mean, but you don't see that anymore in boxing. You still get that in MMA, even though the fighters don't get paid enough, even though there's too many cards, all that good stuff.
Yep.
MMA's in a good spot. Okay, that's fighter of the year. Let's roll through these. Fight of the year in 2019, Brandon. To me, there's only one. Do you disagree with that?
I do. This was my conceding to you just to get you to stop yelling at me about Israel Adesanya being the fighter of the year.
First of all, I don't need your MMA pity ever, including inside a cage once we get there, okay?
Oh, so now we're back on?
Is 2019 over yet? All right, we might fight right now. This might be alive, all right?
Yeah, I mean, dude. You think that there's only one.
There's only one, Brandon.
But there's also, you just realized in the fighter of the year rankings that you were like, oh my God, there were like 17 fights.
Cejudo and Volkanovski. And Usman, oh my God, Nunes isn't even on this list. What happened here? All right, there's one fight of the year. I was there. It was April. It was Atlanta. It's our choice collectively for CBS Sports 2019 Fight of the Year. Israel Adesanya wins the interim middleweight title and a 5-round war with Kelvin Gastelum. Wow, 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 Brandon. It was one of those fights that had so many seesaw moments. Remember when Gastelum almost submitted him twice in the fourth round? Just there was that overall feeling of this is a war, and it came early. Like, oh my God, this is a war, right? It wasn't Corrales Castillo in boxing, but it had that early feel where you're like, neither guy's backing up. They're like, both are here to win. It's the best performance of Kelvin Gastelum's somewhat up and down career. Like, he came in there championship ready to make a damn statement. Remember, he was supposed to get a title shot against Robert Whittaker, and it fell through when Whittaker got hurt, right?
Yep.
So this was his title shot, more or less. He fought like a damn champion. But we didn't know about Izzy at this point. And mind you, again, coming off that Anderson Silva win, some people are like, yeah, maybe he's not the real. How do you not knock out a 42-year-old legend who may have been drinking the OJ in the morning? All right, why are we on that? We don't know that. I'm not saying that. Okay, what, lawyers line one? Red team go. Did you ever watch Son of a Woman?
No.
You ever watch Son of a Woman on weed? No, that's a half baked joke. Sorry, I don't want to take you down that rabbit hole. Anyway, Izzy had to prove so much in that fight, Brandon. That he's a legitimate title contender, but that he had balls and a backbone. We love those moments of when a man gets tested. He gets dropped in the fire, but he don't burn, brother. Where I come from, you either smoke or you get smoked. And the only one in that cage that had a lighter was Israel Adesanya. That was so good, right? That was right off the dome, right off the damn dome. Brandon, I was blessed. Hashtag blessed. Shout out to people like Dylan Hager, one of our listeners, who loves the fact that I was wearing some weird orange pullover that night over my dress shirt. I was blessed to be there in an orange outfit, 10 feet from the cage. It was hell. But a fight of the year can be a fight of the year if it's just two guys running into each other all night. That's fun. But this one had those dramatic turns, right? I'm just blabbering into a microphone, Brandon. Summarize to the listeners in only the succinct way that you can why this was our choice.
I mean, there were so many damn great fights this year, but like you said, this one, it captured the attention of fans. It was almost one of those moments where, like, a Griffin Bonner, where you're like, hey, You gotta tune into this. There's some crazy ish going on right now. This fight, I have no idea how long it's gonna last.
Did it get better round by round? It did. Tell me it did.
I think it maintained its incredible pace from the outset because Kelvin Gastelum had no interest in wrestling to start that fight. He just wanted to go in there and throw his left hand as hard as he could at Israel Adesanya, and he landed multiple times. that was probably my favorite part of that was that Israel ends up walking out of that cage like a duck with his giant lip swollen because of how much damage he took while dishing out his own amount onto Kelvin's face. It was just
Izzy almost took more visible damage. Yet I thought he cleanly won the fight. I thought he deserved the win. It almost seemed like he had to endure more. Just externally. Internally, you never know. You never know what a guy's going through. Pain and destruction, broken ribs, pee and blood, all that gross stuff.
You know what didn't make our list that we're going to go through in a second that I'm very upset now that we forgot?
Say it.
Romero Costa.
It's up there. It's up there in that discussion. It was bang, bang, start to finish. Yeah, they brought it. They absolutely brought it. That's the fight of the year because it was great and entertaining, but it mattered. Interim title, it proved so much for both guys. Look, you didn't know Izzy had those balls. You didn't.
No.
Granted, he could have got caught in like round four and just went down. That's the end of it.
Would you feel better saying that that fight ends up meaning more than the Robert Whittaker fight? To me, that feels like the actual title fight.
You're saying he earned the title against Gastelum. He won it against Whittaker, but he earned it against Gastelum. Wow, that's like some kind of like weird reverse MMA psychology. I like that. Oh my God, I can't believe this guy's not the fighter of the year after this performance. Good God. What came close, Brandon? What's the one that had the strongest case to upset this?
Well, for me, my voting specifically, I put that Barbarena-Luque fight number two, which was just insane pace, insane striking on display where both dudes just did not back down one inch and just kept throwing haymakers. But
Mr. Barbarena, Mr. Bob Barbarena, yeah.
But well, that one was also just because it was like a surprise. Like Luque was such a heavy favorite going into that fight where he was assumed to just kind of walk over Barbarena, and that dude just put out
a
damn chin for the ages. But
his chin is deteriorating.
Not yet. Poirier Holloway gets number two on our list, and I can't make an argument against it.
Hey, I got to say, Brandon, I was there. I was wearing an orange pullover, and I was 10 feet away. You know what's crazy is there was an element of that fight that it was almost like, damn, this fight's not as good as the one before. Yet, holy crap, this could be fight of the year any other year. Two top 10 guys pound for pound at the moment, at that time, fighting for something that mattered. Holloway trying to become a two-division champion, trying to move up and win an interim to get an opportunity to become a two-division champion. And it was a little bit more tactical than the war before it, but the pace was insane. The damage in the end was very accumulative. And good God, man, you talk about two fights back to back that just kept 10 rounds of glory, 10 rounds of horrors, 10 rounds of I need to sop out my soaking wet orange jumpsuit afterwards. Oh, what a night, Brandon, in Atlanta. And what is crazy is, that week, I don't know if you remember, I was in LA shooting stuff for Fox. Then I took a red eye plane to Philly and a car was waiting for me. And then I called the weigh-in live stream for Clarissa Shields and Showtime in Atlantic City. Then as soon as that was over, I got on a plane. I flew to Atlanta. I was weathered. I was like, should I even be here? What's going on? And then you walk into that business. What a night in MMA. Wow. You can't forget Stipe Dice too. Could have won. Look, the fact that DC didn't follow the game plan and it was just two zombies just banging.
Walking forward with his fingers out.
Yeah,
trying
just
poke him in the
banging.
Eye.
And the fact that it's the heavyweight title rematch and there's so much history involved, it was insane. Usman and Covington that our colleague Brent Brookhouse thought was the fight of the year. Dude, it was hellacious. It was five rounds of boxing and it was two guys that hate each other. It was great.
And like, I feel like that one, just because, I don't want to say that it's recency bias, but like, The volume of strikes, the power on those strikes, too, was just because of the animosity between them and because of the hatred. Like, you could see Usman was overthrowing on all of his punches. Like, he was overthrowing trying to get him out of there. And Colby, for the most part, ate him until he broke his jaw. And it's just one of those fights where it's like, if this happens earlier in the year, we probably actually give it the respect that it deserves. But because it's so late, we're kind of like, oh, God, we got to fit it in somewhere.
It was one of those fights that if you're a casual fan, you dream that a UFC title fight would look like that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. Shout out to...
Plus, you had Iaquinta and Donald Cerrone. that five round.
Yeah,
war
there
in
were.
Canada.
So I want to put those in the category that of Barbarina Luque, where although that one was much more star studded, but there were a bunch of those this year of sort of like mid card ones that were just bangers. Romero Costa was a celebrity version of that. Great year. And look, we had Andrade Namajunas on there. Just the seesaw. I think Andrade Namajunas was no different than Lawler Askren. From the idea of just one person having huge success and then it completely shifting the other way.
But, kind of. I wouldn't say, but you that would mean you'd have Lawler Askren up there for your fight of the year.
I'm saying that they're very close.
I feel
they,
I feel
they were
like
sort of like, they're not traditional fight of the years because it wasn't really back and forth. It was more like one person absorbed a lot and then rallied for a victory. It was kind of like Lesnar and Carwin would never be a true fight of the year pick. Yet it was as dramatic, Brandon, as any other fight I've ever seen in UFC history. Say it's not. Say it, Brandon. Try to sit here and tell me that it's not. All right?
Ooh, you know one we forgot?
I've got one, and I got it from your mom.
That's not necessary. Come on, Brian. It's the holidays.
You know what we forgot?
What else do you want me to say?
I mean, what else?
Merry Christmas to Brock Lesnar.
Evil ass laugh. Cody Garbrandt and Pedro Munhoz.
Damn right. Damn right that was a fight of the year contender. Absolutely.
How about Tony Ferguson and Donald Cerrone?
Yeah, well, no, that's in there, dude. That's in there. Look, you know what? Nate Diaz, Anthony Pettis, not bad. Nate Diaz, Jorge Masvidal, not bad, Brandon, in terms of just being straight excitement. That's the thing. Some fights can be a little bit one-sided, but just be straight drama the whole time.
Nico Price and Tim Means. You remember that fight or no?
I don't remember that fight. I'm sorry. That's where I'm going to cut you off. All right. Knockout of the year, Brandon. It seems obvious. I think this is the runaway of all the categories. The slam dunk. Jorge Masvidal, flying knee, Ben Askren, International Fight Week, July. It's our moment of the year. It's our fighter of the year. It's our pop culture MMA MVP of the year. And it was also a freaking hellacious knockout in a fight that mattered for overall sort of relevancy and title contention. And oh, by the way, it was probably the build, the promotion of the year. Does this fight win promotion of the year in your eyes?
That's not a thing.
It's an award on our podcast here, all right? It's the fight that was best promoted that had you the most excited just on the straight promotion of the two. Like, I'm going to say Khabib Conor may have been the best promoted fight ever. Like, you just had to see from a soap opera standpoint what was going to happen next. This fight had those elements, and then you had 5 seconds. You'll never forget where you were when you watched it. I was cage side in Vegas. Were you in the arena? Where were you?
Which one? Yeah, I was up top.
It's that feeling, that oh shit feeling. There's nothing like it in combat sports, comparative to any other sport. Like, combat sports owns that oh shit feeling because you can hit a 10-run home run in 1 second, right? You can throw a 100-yard touchdown pass in 1 second to win the game. And he did that at the start of this grudge war. What's one style going to look like against this opposite style? No, that style don't matter. The only style is you got knocked the hell out, Ben Askren. And that hush over the crowd for like a half second, and then, I mean, it's just one of those. Brandon, if that thing was if that thing was a drug, I'd sell it by the gram, okay? Thank you, Vanilla Ice. Thank you.
I screamed. I'll say it. I legit. I saw
yeah, but
what
that's
happened.
A Miami home, South Florida homerism.
No, right? that was a what the hell just happened.
That was earthquake weekend where Rashad survived that. What a weekend, Brandon, right? That weekend was pretty badass, right?
I mean,
that's me bringing that heat. That's me bringing that heat.
That was Rashi. Rashi bringing that heat, okay?
Rashi?
Rashad, okay? I don't know. I'm coming up with new stuff here. I'm just, you know, he knows who he is, all right, bro?
Guess what? I'm not Ryan Bader.
Exactly,
not Ryan.
Exactly. Ryan Bader had a good year, too, all right? All right. That's your KO of the year. You liked for runners-up this price upkick when James Vick got sent to hell for, like, the fifth straight time. That was a little overrated, right?
Overrated. All right, what's your number two? What's your number two, guy? You don't even have your list.
Andrade. In a title fight that she was getting dominated in, dropped Rose Namajunas on her freaking head, which is also, oh, that's why I had it number three.
Yeah,
which is also her nickname, right? Pile driver in Portuguese, right?
I didn't know that.
She said it in the post-fight interview in the cage afterwards.
Okay.
Brandon, that moment was freaking insane, but that's not the second best knockout of the year. I don't know how you fools who voted with me did not give the love to Kevin Lee Gregor Gillespie. I mean, you talk about a head kick that knocks a man down, the back of his head hits the fence, and he sits up knocked out. It's poetry in motion.
Yeah. And so was Alexander Rakic against Jimmy Manuel, but you didn't give that the respect.
Rakic! Yeah! Either. Hey, remember at the beginning of the show when I had auto-tune on my voice? That was pretty awesome, man.
Dude, this year for knockouts specifically was just weird. Like,
Do you say weird? I thought there were a lot of people in, even though this was the runaway category of the year, I thought there were some solid ones.
But I'm saying more like, we just had a lot of random and surprising KOs that you just don't see ever. Which is why I put the Nico Price one up there, because it's like, when do you see a guy get knocked out while standing over somebody laying on his back?
That's a good point.
Like, I don't
when
think
do
I've
you
ever
see in a title fight somebody get pile driven, right? Hey, Jessica I getting head kicked to hell by Chev was pretty fan. One guy on our staff calls her Chevy. I don't know if you've seen this before, because the guy's the worst, right? All right.
Justin Gaethje against Edson Barboza was insane.
Hey, Luke Thomas. I don't know if you know this guy, Luke Thomas. I do morning combat with him every week on Showtime Mondays, 12 Eastern on YouTube. He gets on me for my pronunciation. Now, look, I'll butcher a guy. Right? I'll just screw up a name for years. But he says I'm doing Justin Gaethje. Gaethje. He says I'm doing Gaethje. He's saying, do it how Justin does it. Justin Gaethje.
Gaethje?
Gaethje.
Not Gage.
Like it's Gagey. Gaethje.
Not Gage.
Not Dustin Gage, as someone on our staff. That's the absolute worst. What I'm talking about really here is I'm butchering Justin Gaethje. That's not right. Gaethje.
I thought it was Gaethje too. But
all right. What is?
Well, Luke Thomas knows everything apparently.
Yeah. Wow. Look at this budding rivalry right here. All right. I like this. Look, big. Justin Gaethje sent Barboza to hell. That was
Diego Lima, not him. Douglas Lima, uppercut KO MVP into another planet.
And it was one of those viral runs because it just was freak out of nowhere. You love this Bellator Ray Daniels 720 punch.
Yes. How do you not? That was amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty badass.
He did a spin, didn't like what he saw, spun again, and then punched the dude, and the dude just collapsed into him. Like, I don't think you could plan that any better.
You got any others? Because we gotta roll. We gotta roll the heck on, okay, Brandon? Roll.
How about your girl Holly Holm getting sent to hell?
That was beautiful. I mean, you consider it was a title level. It was an important fight. That was a beautiful finish. Our next award is MMA Clown of the Year, Brandon. And it ties in with Knockout of the Year, because it was probably the knockout that I was like, yeah, mother effer, you deserve that, right? No, I'm kidding on that. But still, Clown of the Year. We go to Brazil for this. It's either Michel Pereira for dancing to the cage, gassing out, trying to do a backflip off the cage wall, and against a guy he probably could have beaten fairly easily. No one remembers the guy's name. And Johnny Walker, weirdo.
All right, you done?
Dylan Danis could probably be in this conversation.
Dylan Danis fought one time this year. Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done. Okay. Who's your pick for Clown of the Year?
I don't have one.
Okay, all right.
I gave you your moment to gloat about my two favorite fighters.
It's a tie, by the way. It was a tie. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Submission of the Year for CBS Sports in 2019, Brandon. This is not official
category. This is not in order, no.
This is not an official category. This is for the State of Combat podcast. What's your pick for Submission of the Year?
Oh, man.
I mean, there was a lot of under-the-radar ones. There wasn't, like, one giant one in a title fight where you're like, damn. And then there wasn't one, like, you know, there was that Bryce Mitchell had that
Twister.
It was amazing. But is that really the submission of the year? I don't know. This guy, Aviv Gozali of Bellator, the 19-year-old guy from Israel, had some sick submissions. Remember that five-second one in Bellator Bridgeport where he faked the high five and then Imanari rolled him right into a tap?
Is that another one you were live for?
Yeah. See, if I was live for it, happened. If I didn't see it, it didn't happen. That's really how MMA works, right?
I mean, Misha Serkinov pulling out a submission, I don't think we've seen in, like, a decade in MMA or in UFC anyway. The Peruvian necktie against Jimmy Crute, that was freaking insane.
I think I'm going to give my personal award here, since this is my podcast, to to Ben Askren's bulldog choke on Robbie Lawler. And the reason why is there was controversy involved, but it came at a point where Askren had been getting his ass kicked and flipped it around, and then you didn't think it was going to happen. Suddenly the fight's over, Brandon. You don't really see a lot of bulldog choke finishes at that level.
I mean,
that's white belt stuff, as Luke Thomas would say.
It was just I don't know that that would be the submission of the year, though. Are you giving it that just because of the moment that it was and Ben Askren in his first
fight? Yeah, it wasn't the
fight.
Most beautiful submission. It was somewhat of a bad stoppage. It's all those things.
I mean, the Kron Gracie one was damn good, too, yeah. Against Alex Caceres.
Worst game plan.
Or how about Damian Maia against Ben Askren? Like, that fight that was a stand-up war between yes. a couple of wrestlers, and then Maia just enforces his power on him. And gets the rear naked.
I feel like we should have a separate category for Bellator undercard knockout of the year and Bellator undercard submission of the year, because there's like a billion of them, right?
Well, I mean, Brett Primus with the Gogo Plata.
Yes.
That was sick.
Former champion, Brett Primus.
How about Charles Oliveira with his Anaconda choke? That was sick, too.
Over Daniel Tamer?
Whatever. One of the Tamers.
All right, that's it. I'm done with this category. All right.
You wanted to do this category.
I'm done with it. Brandon, worst moment of the year in MMA in 2019. Wait, give me the favorite. It was all gravy. It was all great to you. There's no bad moments.
I mean, give me some options here because I'm trying to think of what would be a bad moment. I mean,
Matt Mitrione kicked that guy in the Jones and that fight fell apart. That was pretty cool.
I mean, Bellator shouldn't be a part of that category then, because you had a fight this weekend fall apart when a guy showed up to the arena.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Was there a moment this year like we saw on Friday night with Julio Cesar Chavez where people were throwing stuff into the octagon?
On that fight night in another country when that Brandon Fitzgerald jumped under the desk. What was the situation in that? Remember that? Was that Mexico? That was the Yair Rodriguez.
Yes, there you go.
There it is. Yair Rodriguez and Jeremy Stephens.
Yep. Where the fight ends abruptly because Jeremy Stephens gets poked in the eye and then can't see, even though he thinks he can see, but the doctors are telling him he can't fight, and Yair loses his mind, and yeah.
Herb Dean tried to kill a few people in the ring this year with a couple couple of tough stoppages. Do you have any other awards you want to give up, Brandon? Hottest female fighter of the year?
Oh, my God.
Wow. You'll hear the answer on our Patreon show afterwards. All right.
Well, we got to do event of the year.
Instagram follow of the year. Is it Valentina or Antonina? It's your choice.
Why am I friends with you? It's Mackenzie Dern.
Oh, stop that. Not, you know, pre or post. No, come on, stop. Just stop. That's just awful. That's just, I mean, I just don't get down like that. That's awful. Wow.
What's your event of the year?
If he was a girl, you would say he has a badonkadonk.
Joe, that's not acceptable. What did you say?
What's your event of the year? Because there's a lot of good options, man.
It might have to be International Fight Week. What was that? UFC what?
239.
So that was John Jones in a closer fight than expected against Thiago Santos.
Yep. Holly Holm and Amanda Nunes.
Head kick. So there was nothing like the Atlanta show from having the two fight of the year contenders back to back, right? Adesanya and Poirier. There's an energy to that, Brandon, that you and I felt at UFC 217 at MSG, right? Three title wins ending crazy. Nama Yunus by knockout, GSP by submission, Cody Garbrandt gets knocked out. That had an element, but I think Fight Week had that in that fight card too, because of the moment of the year, Masvidal. You know, then the head kick from Nunes. Was there another moment before that?
No, that was, I mean, I can pull that up, but I'm looking at 235 as well, because 235 is one of those sneaky ones to me where you look at it on paper and you're like, oh, it's John Jones against Anthony Smith, whatever. Kamaru Usman beats Tyron Woodley. Those were kind of boring fights, but then you look at Ben Askren against Robbie Lawler was on that card. And then you look at Pedro Munhoz.
Yeah, but you got to finish strong, though. You got to finish strong, okay?
That's fine. Cody Garbrandt and Pedro Munhoz was sick. Zabit against Jeremy Stephens was fun. Johnny Walker, your favorite, beating up Misha Serkinov. Oh, the upset of the year is Diego Sanchez beating Mickey Gall.
Yes.
That's the freaking craziest result of the year by far.
Is it really the craziest? Yeah, we didn't have upset of the year. I guess we didn't prepare properly. What was the
upset
wasn't, of the year?
I don't know that there would be a – the upset might be Jorge Masvidal against Ben Askren because he was a huge underdog going into that fight. But to me, Mickey Gall losing when he's like – 40 years younger than Diego Sanchez and getting just dominated at welterweight was shocking. Who's your prospect of the year? We'll go into event of the year again in a second. I think prospect is easy, though.
Edmund Shahbazyan?
Yeah, Edmund Shahbazyan.
All right, we remixed again. Edmund Shahbazyan. Edmund Shahbazyan. There was a few guys on that in that category, but he really just jumped off the page as a guy that we got to see moving forward. Almost ready for top 10 level. We wanted to revisit that card of the year. dude, it really was 239 because it was the flow and momentum of what we had there, of one finish into another, of Luke Rockhold getting sent to hell by Błachowicz into flying knee knockout, into Nunes head kick. And then the main event was, it was more exciting than people realized, Jones and Santos, because Thiago wouldn't go away and it was suddenly a closer fight than it maybe should have been. But I think that's a pick, dude.
It's still debatable. I mean, I think you're right because we were talking about it that night as if we would have gotten a fourth straight stoppage in the main event, and either way, like if Thiago won, for sure, like that's the event of the year, like, and
we were arguing like, is this the deepest, best, not deepest maybe, but best event in terms of bang, bang, bang. UFC 217 gave us that triple bang there that we like to talk about in Madison Square Garden. UFC 205, the first MSG card was so deep and so good. I always go back to UFC 116, the Lesnar Carwin one. Do you remember those fights leading into it, man? Like Chris Lieben and Sexy Yama. I mean, there was just like, you know, Bonner sent that Krzyzewski to hell, Krzysztof Krzyzewski to hell. And by the way, did you see the movie with Kevin James, that MMA movie?
No.
Dude, you would love that.
I would love that.
My kids laugh at the crap out of that movie. You know what I'm talking about?
Do you think that I'm the age of your children?
Bro, you have not seen that movie. Boss Rutan's no. in it. What's it called?
Bringing down? No, that's a different.
Okay, you
bring the pain or something.
You and your wife need to date night and Netflix and chill with that. Okay, here's the thing: it's a hilarious movie. It does MMA right and UFC right. All the names are in it, like Rogan and stuff. And
oh god, Rogan's in it.
The boss at the end of the video game is Krzysztof Krzyzewski. Remember that dude? All tatted up, bro. He's the bad guy at the end.
Oh lord!
They're trying to save the music department at the high school. Okay.
So
bring the pain. Is that what it's called?
Stop it.
Is that what it's called?
Stop it. 238. Actually,
here comes the boom, bro. That's it.
So 238. Actually, when you look at it now, that actually holds up well because there's four or five fights on here that you're like, whoa. Starts off with Blog Boy against Tai Tuivasa, which was a sloppy fat guy brawl.
Yeah, yeah.
Peter Yan against Jimmy Rivera was a lot of fun. Then you have Tony Ferguson, Donald Cerrone. Kind of one-sided, but a really good fight. You have the Shevchenko knockout of Jessica Ai.
All right.
And then Cejudo rallying against Marlon
Moraes. That was a sneaky good card. It didn't have the top-end star power that you need, but it was a sneaky good card. Cringe performer of the year. Is it Henry Cejudo or Ariel Helwani? What's your pick?
Performer of the year would, oh man.
Cringe, I mean, of the year, yeah.
Probably,
yeah.
Ariel.
Yeah, yeah, he's got that market cornered. Shout out to Ariel Helwani. Triple C cringe, though, is rough. He's rough, bro. He's rough.
No longer Triple C.
He's a double C at this point. You know what? The cringe moment of the year is when Triple C put the diapers on his championship belts in that video. Colby had some cringe this year too, all right? There's a lot of going
on. By the way, I think that's the news that we did not talk about unless you talked about it last week and I just don't remember, that Cejudo gave up the flyweight title.
Yeah. So I don't think that's a bad move because why fluctuate in weight? He's always had problems making weight since he turned pro, so it's like I'm not against that. It gives Joseph Benavidez a chance at the title, which is long deserved, but I kind of wanted to see the Cejudo Benavidez rematch.
Yeah.
And you really lack star power. It's one thing Cejudo had with star power. Now you have potentially... I mean, who's Benavidez facing in this upcoming title fight?
GCA Formiga. It's a fight night main event.
I know, like, Cejudo may have saved the flyweight division this calendar year, so that's a subplot to the year. But if you save it and there's nobody to carry the flag...
He might have saved it for a year.
Yeah, he saved it for his own glory. He kind of became a two-division champion... kind of before he deserved a chance to become one, right? You used to only get that shot when you were like a legend. Now we have two. I mean, dude, GDR was almost a two-division champion when she upkicked Amanda Nunes, right?
Yeah.
Holly Holm almost was one this year as well. Oh, I don't know about almost, but you get my point.
You were so high on that fight going in.
Dude, so many people were talking about the Albuquerque parlay, all right? Right?
So many, meaning you and the person you made the conversation with.
I don't know. Everywhere we went in Vegas that week, we ended up talking about it. And people were like, you know, that's really good. Jones and Holmes together. Do you think they ever did the business?
No comment.
Okay. All right. Hey, we got to look ahead quickly to this weekend. We're having problems with this thing. I can't even click on it. But it's Bellator and it's Risen this Sunday night? Saturday night?
Saturday night.
In Japan. And it's Fedor Rampage, and I don't hate this. What channel is this on?
It's on...
Is this a DAZN production?
Live on Paramount.
All right, Paramount is a CBS product, so shout out to the Paramount Network, right? Bellator is a CBS product by proxy, right? We merged. What are we called now?
Viacom CBS.
Shout out to Viacom CBS. So this actually is the most important fight of the year, if you ask me. It's Fedor, it's Rampage Jackson, and it's going to be sloppy, because that's how we like it, Brandon, all right? Extra sloppy.
You won't even play your soundboard
because I'd
this.
Have to find it under the boxing pages. It would take a long time, all right?
Yeah, this is going to be extra, because Rampage's latest pictures have him looking pretty thick with three C's. I hope this fight only lasts about 2 minutes, because I don't know what it's going to be after that. I mean, the thing is, Fedor's still got power in those hands.
Yeah.
It might be fading.
I mean, so does Rampage, but it's going to look gross. If no one catches each other right away, it's going to look really gross. What else? Who's Chandler fighting on this undercard?
It's a crossover, so most of them are fighting risen fighters.
It's not moving me. I'm sorry.
I mean, Michael Chandler's interesting.
I love Michael Chandler.
MVP's back against some Asian guy.
I have a fight with some Thai guy.
Lorenz Larkin's back on this card.
All right, I'll tune in for the main event. Anyone else? No. Oh, Derek Cruikshank is back with a porn mustache. Look at this guy; he's great. All right, that's the year that was in MMA. Brandon Wise, we'll be back. After the new year, before the new year, to do our end of decade chat somewhere around January 1st, somewhere in and around that date.
If you make me come in here on New Year's Day, I'm going to bounce basketball off your head.
Yeah, okay, so maybe next year we'll be back. Shout out to all our award winners, including Cringe Master Henry Cejudo and Michelle Padede for Clown of the Year. And
do you have a listener of the year?
That's a great question. Actually, I'm going to give it to you. Our MMA listener of the year for 2019 is Dylan Hager, because he listens to all three shows, brother. All right? All three. And comments and contributes. Shout out to Omar Al Rashid, a big time listener of this show from down under. I love our people. I love our friggin' people. Shout out to Rashad Evans, who I'm going to let you know now, was voted 2019 SOC co-host of the year. So tough break for you, Brandon. You had
You're
a good
such
run.
An
yeah. You had a good debut year. Not good enough in the end, okay? For what we're trying to do here on this show. It was a great year. It was a great year for this show. It's a great year for you moving to Connecticut. The fans didn't get the fight they wanted, Campbell Wise.
It's going to happen. Don't worry.
Survive or die.
It might end up being like a wrestling match where I just show up and hit you in the back of the head with a chair,
I don't know.
Kate Rashad's nuts out your mouth, then talk to me.
Okay, I will do that. Who breaks a door, honestly, right? That's the way it is. Hopefully all of our favorite fighters will stay off drugs. Hopefully, stay thirsty on Instagram, everyone. Check out our work at State of Combat on Twitter. Brandon, it's been a hell of a fun ride doing this show with you, okay? Thanks for being, absolute weirdo. I mean, I hope you enjoy the holiday. Look, I don't know what you're celebrating this year, but if it's Christmas this week, man, enjoy it. Hey, it's night two of Hanukkah. You in on that? What are you getting down with?
Christmas, bro.
All right. I'm not trying to exclude people, you know?
We got our tree last week.
Oh, that's good timing. You know, I had cousins like that who put it up every year on Christmas Eve.
That's weird. Why?
I don't know.
Did they just feel like they don't want to have like the expense of the lights being on all the time?
I don't know. We always had a rule in our house that couldn't come up before Thanksgiving, so we always did it the day after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's fine, because that gives you the full month.
You know, the first year I ever got a real tree, about 12 years ago, the kids were real small, it smelled so good. I never before or since got one that smelled that good, that I left it up until March 1st. no lights on it or ornaments, just straight up just kept the tree in there until I found out one of my sons was allergic to it, and it's why he was in and out of the hospital that year. So hey, great idea there, Campbell. But it smelled really good though. It was like an air freshener in your house 24/7. It was so piney.
I love that you call me the giant weirdo when this is your life.
Yeah,
this is what happens to you every day.
This is my life. Yeah, that'll do it for MMA in 2019. Hope you enjoyed that. We'll be back with a bang next year, okay? We'll be on the streets. We'll be giving you the interviews you want and need, okay? You're going to get some more sugar in your diet as well. In the name of love. That's Rashad Evans. That's our co-host.
I thought you told me you didn't need more sugar.
No, I'm trying to kill Sugar. Sugar brings out the worst in me. All right, listen, I need to quit a lot of things. Okay, listen, maybe pro wrestling is one of them.
We're going to get into, like, I'm going to try to get this fight off the ground again, but I feel like this is going to turn into like a Creed and Rocky moment where we're training together, trying to just get in shape and make our lives feel better.
Yeah, that's probably true. I will not half shirt on the beach with you at any point, though.
Tube
as well.
Socks.
Yes. That's it. I have nothing more to say. This show's over. For Brandon Wise, for Sugar Rashad Evans, this is your boy BC. Happy holidays. Thank you for listening to our ridiculousness. And I got two words for you. And I got two words for MMA in 2019. And I got two words for the Shevchenko sisters. We out.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.